Hello and welcome to episode number three of Splash Pad, a TCU on SI podcast focusing on the TCU women's basketball team. I'm your host, Tori Couch, and I'm joined by the voice of Killer Frogs, JD Andrus. We are recording on Sunday, December 1st, following TCU's Thanksgiving week road trip to the Cayman Islands Classic. The number 17 ranked Horned Frogs went 2-0 in the Cayman Islands and are now 8-0 on the season. And of course, the big headline coming out of there is they beat number three Notre Dame. So I think that's where we're going to start. But JD, welcome you in. How are you doing today?
I'm living the dream, Tori. TCU football's 8-4 on the year. TCU volleyball's in the postseason. Women's basketball's at an all-time high. Men's basketball, men's basketball. That's pretty much all I got to say for them. Baseball season's right around the corner. It's a great time right now to be a Horned Frog.
It really is. It really is. But let's start with Notre Dame. That's, there have been four games since we last did a podcast. We'll touch on all four of them, but the big headliner is Notre Dame beating them 76-68. TCU outscored Notre Dame 31-12 in the fourth quarter to pull off this win. They were down 11-0 to start the game, just did not play well until kind of the second half. And this is a huge win for the program. It is the I have this note. It is the first time TCU has overcome a 10-point deficit to win in six seasons. It's tied for the highest ranked win in program history. It's the fourth time TCU has defeated the number three team in the nation. There's all these firsts, all these things. This is a huge win for the program, piggybacking on the NC State win less than 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, and I think you said something that might be very, very interesting for the game we're going to talk about later, is TCU has defeated the number three team in the nation four times in program history. It's a very good chance that South Carolina will be the ranked number three team, most likely number two, but there is a chance they could be number three when that matchup happens. So it's just a little nugget to keep track of. Tori, we talked about it before we started recording. I didn't get to watch much of it because I was working during the time, so I was keeping track of it a little bit throughout the first half, and then in the second half, our editor text and let me know the final score, and then I immediately did a deep dive. Got to watch some of the game that I found on YouTube that I could watch a lot of it, piece the clips together, but I don't even care that they won, right? Like, that was the first time that we've kind of really seen TCU take, get hit in the face and see how they respond. My God, they responded. Haley Van Lith and Sedona Prince, like, built the statues, question mark? Like, is it too early? I mean, they just, it's kind of been the story, right? Even when they played North Carolina State, when as soon as TCU gets into trouble, you just see them and their gear take a whole nother level, and they just take over.
Yeah, no, they are such a dangerous duo, and they do it at such a high elite level. And like you said, they both kind of just took off, especially in the second half. Haley Van Lith scored 19 of her 21 points in the second half. She also had seven assists for the game and one turnover. That is huge from your point guard, or kind of your main ball handling if she traded off duties a little bit. Sedona, 20 points, 20 rebounds, eight blocks, so almost a triple double, four assists, three steals in 40 minutes. Unbelievable stat line to do that, playing the entire game. And if you watch, she just had high energy the whole time. Like, she just kind of watching it was the same Sedona we just keep seeing over and over. And she became the first player in NCAA history to record at least 20 rebounds and eight blocks in a game versus an AP top five opponent.
It's not even like, it's not even too grand of a gesture to say that Sedona Prince is easily the number one player in the country right now. Only other player that could maybe give her a run for her money was Hannah Hidalgo, who was on the court for this game for Notre Dame. She's had an exceptional year, but what Sedona has been able to do, like, this is a level of her game that has not been with her since she started college, 6 years ago. Like, this is a whole new level to what we've seen out of her. And she played 40 minutes. We're going to talk about with the USF game. Like, she played 40 minutes there. Is it sustainable? I sure hope so. But, like, right now, it's just really, really fun to watch. Like, it sometimes it like watching her under, the rim try to get rebounds over everyone. Like, it looks like she's playing, middle schoolers half the time. Like, she's just like, it feels like she's bullying everyone. Like, she looks that good.
Well,
Haley Van
she
Lith,
is.
she would well, no, she, I mean, yeah, but like, it's just such a weird gap that you don't really see from someone who's been in college this long, right? And I think a lot of it is, Van Lith has talked about it a lot throughout after every game, is like, her and Sedona are still getting their connection going, right? And you're really, really starting to see it blossom to what it is now. Like, a lot of these players, and you saw it in the first half against Notre Dame, where they were kind of just taking shots that weren't always good shots. And part of that is because when you have someone who is as good a rim protector as Sedona Prince is, it allows you to just be like, hey, you know what? I'm feeling good right now. I want to throw this one up. And if not, Sedona's there. So I think that is probably the biggest part of where, she is at and what she means to this TCU team.
Yeah, well, and Mark Campbell has talked about her development over the last two seasons and how much she has grown. He at the time said NC State was the best game she's ever played at TCU and possibly in her entire college career. I think if had the opportunity to ask him after this game, he might have said this one's the best game she's ever played. But it just speaks to your point of it's going to be fine hard to find somebody in the country who can touch what she can do, especially at the center position, because she has such a height advantage, such a skill advantage for her height, and then she can step out and shoot, jumpers and occasionally the three. That just gives TCU so many options. But if you look at her story, and she almost kind of stopped playing basketball before she came to TCU. She wasn't sure if she was going to complain, but she decided to come here. And now she's going to be on every single award watch list and probably be a finalist for every single one. It's an incredible story.
Yeah, not even to mention a top 10 pick now in the women's NBA draft where she's projected to go. Like, it's. I don't want to say TCU has become redemption U, basically, but that's kind of what they feel like, right? Like, Haley Van Lith need a little bit of redemption. Same with Madison Connor when she came here. You same with Sedona, like you just talked about, Maddie Sure, like. You're seeing a lot of people that like kind of need that fresh start. And it's what Mark Campbell kind of taking pride on is like, you saw the video after the NC State game where like, and Haley Van Lith talked about it, how happy she is to be at this program. And she feels like she can be herself. You've heard that from a lot of players. And you're really starting to see like their energy every game is only building. Like they entered even the USF game, even the game against Incarnate Word. Like, you would have thought that they were playing a top five matchup with the intensity they played.
Yeah. Well, and this even extends back to last year, to your point of kind of a new start for all these girls that are coming in. All of them just kind of had this feeling like this is my fresh start, this is a new place. I like Coach Campbell, all these things. And I think that speaks to who he is. He creates a culture where players feel comfortable to be themselves, but also try new things and develop and grow. And that's really hard to find, especially at the Division I level, because you're so focused on winning, you're so focused on some high stake things. To find that is really special for players. So I think it's interesting, yeah, that so many players have come here and kind of hit the refresh reset button a little bit, but they're doing it at a high level, and TCU is benefiting because of that.
Yeah. Also, one of the biggest things from this game as well is we kind of have talked about how big the 3-point shooting has been, right? And it just wasn't there against Notre Dame. I mean, they shot 28%, which is 10% less than what their season average is. Like, they wondered what a team TCU team would look like when a team tries to take away the 3-point, and you kind of saw it, and they still were able to pull out a win, which. We were messaging after the game, and it gives me so much more confidence about their ability for this team. I've just like, I mean, Madison Connor had the quietest 18-point game you're going to see from a player around the country. Like, she finished with 18 points, and you barely even scratching the surface of talking about her just because of the performances of Sedona and HVL, right? Like, this team is deep.
And I think that's going to be a common theme this year with Madison putting up 18, 20, 25, depending on kind of the game and situation, that it's going to be quiet. She'll probably have a game here and there where she just takes over, has a 30-point game, something like that. But for the most part, she is going to be a quiet 20-point scorer. That's not a bad thing because it, like we've talked about before, it speaks to the depth that you've got. And one thing that really stood out to me, kind of looking at things once the dust settled, Taylor Bigby played 38 minutes. I mean, more or less, she played the entire game, had 9 points, 4 rebounds. That's huge. She was coming off the bench last year at USC, kind of their top six person. And now she's a very key cog for TCU. That is, I think that speaks to her work ethic and kind of what Campbell has done to help develop her in the offseason in a short amount of time. But that one stood out to me as well to see what she was able to do and how much she played in that game.
Yeah, I mean, when we started talking about what happens when Maddie Sherry comes back, like Taylor Bigby has played herself into being such a key role for this team, right? And then you still have Donovan Hunter, who's either getting over 25 minutes a game or getting all of it. Like, I mean, Agnes had her most minutes of the season against Notre Dame. Like, there's so much skill, at the guard position that this team that it's like, I guess the one thing is like what I'm trying to get to is HVL had 3 fouls in the first half, right? And she didn't get any after that, which is really big. But it's like, you still have a lot of skill that if she does get in that foul trouble, you still can throw Donovan Hunter in. You could throw Taylor Bigby in. Agnes is more than capable of being able to be in that spot. Like, it just it allows these players to play so much more free, especially when, Taylor Bigby didn't have the greatest shooting game, 33%, which, it doesn't sound all that bad, but like she was 0 for 6, I believe, in the first half, like just wasn't able to get anything going. I mean, no one really was much, but she's kind of like a more of a floor general. Like, you just kind of let her be and she's going to dictate what happens.
Yeah. Well, and you talk about Haley picking up those three early fouls, and yeah, there's all these guards behind her who can come in and make plays and do things, but I don't want to overlook the fact that I think arguably Haley's the best guard in the country. I haven't watched every single guard in the country, so I can't say that with absolute confidence, but there's probably an argument to be made. So you can't just replace her and say it's a one for one replacement. But to your point, I think there's enough depth and these other guards are talented enough that it's not a giant drop off, that it's you're still going to be able to stay extremely competitive if Haley has to sit for 5 minutes because she picked up a fourth foul or something like that. So I still, there's things she can do that you just can't replace. But like you said, TCU's got enough talent that it's not, you're not just going to fall off a huge cliff with the replacement or if you had to. But no, this was a game I think in a sense TCU needed, especially going into South Carolina, to show that they can come out and play a little bit flat and still find a way to win. And that was something earlier in the week they had played Idaho State, won that game 86-46. They came out really flat in that game. They got out rebounded in the first half, didn't shoot particularly well, just didn't play well in the first half. And one thing they talked about after that game was they need to start quicker. They can't start slow because if you do that against your Notre Dames, your South Carolinas, your Kansas States, your Iowa State, some of those teams in the Big 12, you're going to pay for it. In a sense, they kind of did because they had to mount such a furious comeback. And so to see them actually do that and win, I think is a huge feather in this team's cap and a huge learning lesson as well.
Yeah, you know who didn't need them to win though? My heart, Corey. I put the train up last week because I was like, or 2 weeks ago because I was really excited after beating North Carolina State. And you're gonna go and you're gonna beat Notre Dame, and you're gonna leave me just with a whole week with my thoughts about what this TCU women's basketball team can do, and I can't contain it. Like, I am itching. Like, I wish the game was today. I so badly. I went from, wow, this is a Sweet 16 team, to Natty or bust. Like, I know it's a little big of a jump, but like, every team is beatable this year, women's basketball. Like, there's no
Yes.
true juggernaut, at least not one that has proved to be yet. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I just feel like you put your best five against our best five, and I'm probably taking our best five 90% of the time.
No, I agree. And kind of to your point, I think it's hard not to, after a game like that, go, well, let's book our ticket to the Natty, let's book our ticket to Tampa Bay, whatever.
You're saying I should refund my Tampa Bay ticket I bought?
Maybe. Solely because basketball is a weird game. Like you mentioned, they didn't shoot the three particularly well. They found other ways to win. That's a sign of a great team. And their defense picked up in the fourth quarter, second half and fourth quarter especially. That's a sign of a championship level caliber team. But there's just so many things that can happen in a tournament or in the course of a season. We haven't hit the conference season yet. There's so many things that can go wrong or things that don't bounce your way, but
Look at last year.
exactly. I didn't want to say the word, so I'm not going to, but there's just things
I'll
that
say
can
it. I'll take it on the chin. That's fine.
things that can not go your way, but I still think Sweet 16 is a very realistic expectation for this team. Maybe even, saying this might be an Elite Eight team and that be kind of your expectation. I think for me to be able to say that definitively, I need to see a little bit more, see how we do against kind of that early bit in the Big 12, things like that. But this is a team where I think those expectations are just going to keep climbing. Because like you said, there's not a dominant, overly dominant team this year in women's college basketball because South Carolina got beat. UCLA beat them. So there nobody's immortal this year, unlike past years that like we've seen.
Yeah, I think that's just, I don't know. I think that's, had South Carolina not lost already once this season, it might be like, you know what? This would tell us a lot more. But now that I've seen a lot lose, like, I've seen blood. I want more. Like, it's so much fun to just be a part of right now. Like,
Yes.
you can kind of feel a mood shift, especially kind of like even around the city. Like, I've seen a lot of women's basketball ads on TV throughout the streets. Like, people are genuinely talking about it and excited for this group. Like, it's, the buzz is starting to really be there.
Yeah, and that's
Scary.
it's a little scary, but I think it's really good for this program. And it does put some pressure on them and some expectations. And I think we're going to see kind of what that does to them. Because one thing that to me, kind of going off of what we've talked about, is as a team, how do you manage those expectations and not get caught up in, well, we've got two top 15 wins. Maybe you beat South Carolina, you get another top five. How do you manage those expectations and not get too far ahead of yourself? I think that's going to be a challenge, something this team you have to watch for. Now they are veteran, and that's one of the things that they keep coming back to that. And I agree, I think it's really important that they're older. And a lot of these girls have played in Final Fours, Elite Eights, NCAA tournament games. So they know things can change really quick. But that's something to watch, just kind of not getting ahead of themselves a little bit.
I think Mark Campbell has done an exceptional job too about it, keeping the girls grounded. I mean, you still see him switching up his bench almost every game so far, that trying to figure out what works, kind of keep the girls on their toes. And you know, I think it will be a big part on the girls have to figure it out themselves and kind of go from there. But it is interesting when, like, Mark Campbell has never really been at a location and experienced that big success himself either. So, like, enjoy it. Like, just enjoy the moment, but just don't get caught up in it.
Exactly. With the Notre Dame game, that's also Mark's first time ever TC has opened the season 7-0 for consecutive seasons. So again, just kind of hitting a lot of these firsts. It gives TCU two ranked wins in the same season since 1920, and it's their first top 10 win since 2018. So right after that game, they went to play South Florida. And so, kind of like we talked about, you have a lot of players who played a lot of minutes. They only had two deep on the bench, Aaliyah Roberson and Agnes Onwenu against Notre Dame. So the starters played a lot of minutes. So you go into South Florida thinking things might be a little bit closer than you're comfortable with. But really, South Florida never really had much of a chance in this game. It was 21-11 at the end of the first quarter, and then TCU was able to kind of just blow things open. And so I think that was nice to see that TCU was able to play at their level right after a tough game like that and not really fall off. I think that was good to see.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that, and I'm gonna just kind of echo the point is, it's not that, it was a upset watch kind of game, but, when you had Sedona playing 40 minutes, Madison Connor playing 37, Taylor Bigby 38, Bailey Benlith over 30, and then you have to turn around and play another team, not even getting started on the emotional weight of that, like after the big win, like. It's really, really tough. And the fact that the girls didn't really even falter for a step really points to their mindset. And I know we just kind of talked about how do you not get wrapped up in that. And I think seeing them be able to still take care of business as handedly as they did speaks volumes about where they are mentally right now.
And Haley and Sedona both played over 30 minutes still against South Florida, which I think that's kind of an expectation now, almost, is that the two of them are going to play big chunks of every single game just because that works so well. Get com more comfortable with each other, like we talked about earlier. So that way, when you're in conference play, it's second nature. Madison played almost 30 minutes, but you had almost, I think everybody got in against South Florida. So that was really nice to see. Just again, building up that depth and continuing to see what pieces work together, who's kind of can do what for down the line. One thing that I thought was really something that I just, and again, there's not a thing, I don't think a whole lot of things that the Cayman Islands Classic control in this, but I just thought it was really sad that these two games were not on ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN Plus, something like that, especially the Notre Dame game. And they were playing in front of like 1,000 people or less for the games that they were and what TCU and Notre Dame have done. That was just kind of something that I took away. I was like, oh, that's tough. That's sad.
Get
But
flow sports out of college sports. You ruined college baseball and you're ruining college basketball. The people that work at Flow Sports, I've interacted with them. Great people, really nice, care about what they do. But you can't have a paid broadcasting service and also have a really bad broadcast. You got to pick one or the other. If you tell me it's free and it's really bad, you know what? It was free, whatever. You're going to charge me $30 to watch. I better be able to see the sweat beads down every player clearly. Not be wondering, which player is that? Because it's so fuzzy. It's just, these girls deserve better. College sports deserves better. Flow sports, you are nothing.
well, especially women's college sports has been, particularly basketball, with last year with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and a little bit Hailey Van Lith and things like that. It's gaining more interest, and so to push some of these games on these sites that it's either you can't get to, hard to get to, have to pay for, it just discourages people from watching. So it's, I'm with you. It'd be, hopefully in the future, these games are in a much more accessible location. Well, let's go back and chat just a little bit about the two games prior to the Cayman Islands Classic that kind of got us set up. The first one was Incarnate Word. TCU won that 81-43. Some things of note that I found. Agnes Emanu-Nopu and Una Jovanovic started that game. So kind of going back to, again, just kind of Campbell trying to find different things that fit. And everyone played with eight players hitting 20 minutes. So pretty straightforward win, but it was nice to see everyone get in and get a little bit of game time.
Yeah, the biggest part of that, and we talked about this before, and I wanted to make sure I mentioned it, is my cousin is a PE teacher for elementary school around town, and he took his a group of girls, to the game because it was element the girls come watch game And he talked about how amazing it was seeing one, the stadium that packed and full of energy from all these middle schoolers and elementary aged girls and singing out to every songs. And he's like, that even after the game that they were coming up to him and talking about, a week later, still talking about how cool it is that, these they got to watch this team play, especially a team of this caliber, right? Like, that's not easy to see, and they're giving a lot of cool things to, girls and putting them opening their eyes to what college sports could look like for the first time. So it was a really, really cool experience to see Dom.
Yeah, I like that TCU does that game. It's a neat way to engage young girls in college sports and just, like you said, open their eyes to different possibilities.
Ooh. It's also official. TCU is the last undefeated Big 12 team. West Virginia just had their first loss of the season against Texas. Just ended 5 seconds ago.
Okay, well, interesting. That'll be something to keep an eye on is how long TCU can kind of hold that mantle.
Think it comes down to next Sunday, week from
Like it
today.
does. Like it does. Yeah. And then the other game mentioned earlier was Idaho State, 186-46. And that was a Big Sky team that Mark Campbell knows from his days at Portland State. It was the first time those two teams had ever played. That's why they were matched up. Things to note, Sedona Prince joined the 1,000-point club in this game, took her 76 games. That was a huge benchmark for her. Like we talked about earlier, her college career has some twists and turns. She's had injuries. So for her to get there is a huge accomplishment. As a team, they shot 57% from the field. So they're just very efficient. And I mentioned earlier, they kind of got off to that slow start, which they had against Notre Dame. So hopefully they learn from that and don't have that again against South Carolina. And then the defense really picked up in the second half against Idaho State, held them to 17 total points and 6 made shots. So those are the highlights from the Iowa State game. Any thoughts on that, JD?
No, I just think it's, the more you kind of look around the country, right? Like at different games, like in women's basketball is weird about this. And not really weird, but you kind of learn to accept it as the top 15, top 20 maybe, women's basketball teams are really like those are your teams that are going to be able to win it all, right? Like those teams, like the bottom five of the top 25 are constantly getting rotated up because there's never a good solidified group. Like a lot of teams struggle to kind of get to that point. I mean, look at LSU. They won on 1 point by to Washington. Oklahoma State lost to Richmond. Like, Iowa State, who, well, I don't know what's wrong with them, barely beat Drake. Like you're seeing a lot of teams that like who are on that 15 to top 25 borderline kind of struggle to put teams away that they shouldn't struggle with. And TCU is yet to do that. So like it's just another sign of what how good this team actually is.
Well, you mentioned Iowa State, and so that transitions, that's a good transition to South Carolina, which is not their next game. They will play Florida Atlantic on Wednesday, December 4 at 6:30 p.m. Florida Atlantic's 5-3. Kind of the notable game on their schedule was a loss 82-54 to Florida. So I think kind of to your point just now, JD, TCU's been pretty consistent on these teams that are not even in the top 25, let alone a power conference. I see this being one that they should be able to kind of rotate everybody in and get some solid experience and minutes.
Yeah, and even if they are looking ahead to South Carolina, they can look ahead. Like basketball is one of those where you can kind of look ahead because you still have to play the game, right? Like it's different with football because maybe that means your game plan isn't as set in stone. But like you can kind of look ahead when you're playing Florida Atlantic because you're going to out-talent them probably six, seven deep in your roster before you get one that's close to yours. So, they can, if they want to look ahead, don't do it too much. But like, they kind of think they got the luxury of that, right?
So yeah, and then that would be South Carolina would be next. So South Carolina is currently 7-1. Notables, they beat Iowa State 76-36. I had to look at that score about four times to make sure I read it right when I first saw that. They beat NC State 71-57. We talked a little about that last time. And then their loss is to UCLA 77-62. What I found interesting was the Iowa State game was after the UCLA game. So I don't know if Iowa State's that bad or South Carolina was just that ticked off after the UCLA game and just came out, hair on fire, and it didn't matter who they were going to play. They were going to be blown out by 40 points. But that's kind of where South Carolina sits here after 8 games.
To be the best, you got to beat the best, right? Like, beat Notre Dame, you beat NC State. Like, but this is a whole different kind of animal that you're walking into. Notre Dame is close, right? Like, Notre Dame has looked really well this year, but this is the test of all tests. This is what we've been working for. We talked about it whenever we originally started this podcast that, like, we wanted them to just go, one or two, 2-1, we're fine with either of those, as long as you get one win, right? Now you're looking 2-0 and you're looking 3-0 down the barrel. Like, let's go out and win a game. Let's see how good we are. And I keep saying that, right? Like, let's see against NC State how good you are. Let's see against Notre Dame how good you are. This is the last test. After this, they get conference play. Like, they get 3 weeks of some cupcake non-schedules, and then they get conference play. Like, this is kind of your last big. I mean, there's some ranked teams, right, in the Big 12 who are going to give them some tests, right? But, like, this is your, hey, you know what? If you can beat this team or lose by five points or less, like, you are in super, super great shape for the rest of the year.
Well, and it's one of those games that, thinking about the NCAA tournament with the women's tournament, those first the sub-regionals are hosted on campus. So if you can come out of this stretch 3-0 or 2-1 with a 5-point loss, and then do well in conference, you're looking at hosting a sub-regional probably. So this game, as wild as it sounds, carries a lot of weight for March, not just for your record, but kind of the positioning there too. And this is not the same team. Well, it is more or less the same team that they had last year that went 38-0, won the national title. Their head coach, Dawn Staley, has led South Carolina to 3 national titles and 6 Final Fours in the last 9 years. She consistently has elite teams. They've lost one or two key pieces, but for the most part, it's the same team as last year. So this again, I think you're going to see new things against this team that TCU can do. NC State showed us certain things, Notre Dame showed us certain things, and I think you're going to see new things against South Carolina. They've got a really solid defense. They held Iowa State scoreless for 15 minutes in that 40-point win. They give about 54 points per game. TCU's 47, so pretty comparable. They're plus 12 on rebounding margin. They allow 34% shooting. They average 5.5 blocks per game, and they force about 18 turnovers per game. So kind of like TCU, they like to use their defense to kind of get things going.
The one thing that right that South Carolina is really, really going to be able to lean on, right, is their depth at the forward position. They can run two bigs and do really well with it. And they've been running it a decent amount, especially in their big games against UCLA. They ran it. Like, Sedona's been running rampant. I mean, Tori, put yourself in Dawn Staley's shoes. Are you running two bigs and trying to shut her down and making your guards beat you?
That
Or
was kind of, I listed some, keys to the game. That was one that I put in there was, do you see maybe what advantage you can take away that, what the advantage that TC has with Sedona, what can you do to take that away? Maybe running two forwards at her or rotating, constantly rotating new fresh legs at her. So, as she's getting tired, you have a fresh defender on her who can force her to kick the ball out or whatever it is that you want to do. I'm with you. I think you've got to look at ways to get Sedona uncomfortable.
yeah, like, I don't envy Mark Campbell at all. Having to go against Dawn Staley, like, it's a chess match, and she might be playing checkers still. Like, who knows? Like, she's one of the greatest for a reason. And it's the big test for a reason, right? Like,
And I think to what you just said there, it's not just a test for the players, it's a test for the coaching staff.
Yeah.
I think everybody's going to learn a lot from this game. With the forwards, they've got four who really play a significant amount. All of them, two of them average nearly 10 points a game. Two of them are right around 6, 7 points. They're all pretty good rebounders, and two of them have 9 blocks each on the season. Sedona has 23. I think partly as the competition they played, partly as her height advantage. So, but I think those two will be able to kind of give Sedona a little bit of competition down low for just the pure shot blocking and kind of shot altering. Maybe you take an uncomfortable shot type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, you just talked about it, and it's still like Sedona's still 4 inches taller than their tallest forward, right? Like, that's still a massive height advantage, even if you run two bigs. Like, Sedona can legitimately still dominate the boards in this. Like, that is a lot of height to have to deal with, even if you run two bigs who are trying to box her out. Like, that's still enough of a height advantage that she can reach over the top. I think that's like, yeah, they got a lot of depth at forward. I just talked about it, but there's so much height on Sedona, man, that it's like, even if they do run two bigs, like the pick and roll will still probably be there just because of the height. And so I think this becomes a chess match between Dawn and Mark and Sedona and whatever's thrown at her.
And even if they do kind of double her and it bothers her just a little bit where she can't get off a clean shot, well, you got to kick it out. So then you're leaving it up to the guards to hit their shots, which they can do. And now their guards are also very elite. It's pretty much the same group they had from last year's national title team. Their kind of lead one is Tahina Papau. I hope I said that right. She's a fifth year, 13 points a game, 50% from 3-point line. That's top 25 nationally, and 10 steals in 8 games. So I think that's also going to be a little bit of a separating factor is can you gain any slight advantage over their guards? Because I think they're going to be pretty evenly matched.
Yeah, I mean, look at this roster and compare our players to it, and you will find that it's a mirror identical matchup, right? Like, it's. I think that's kind of why I'm so excited for this game, is we talked about, Notre Dame kind of being identical in the guard category, not the forward category. What's different between this and the Notre Dame game is the forward position for South Carolina. Is a lot, it has a lot of experience. Same with Sedona. So you're going to get a lot of, a lot of a good matchups between players who have played for a long time and know what to do. That Notre Dame had very, very, low experience forward positions that you're going to get really, really good matchups on everywhere in this court. Like, it becomes, can you win against the person that you're guarding? Can you win against the person you're going to be driving against? And I think that has me so excited for this game.
Well, and Jay, kind of to wrap up our thoughts on South Carolina, what do you think are kind of the two or three keys to the game for TCU that if they do these things right, should walk away with a W?
I'm trying to decide which is the most important. I think a lot of what is the most important becomes what foul trouble do you get into, right? Especially if you're throwing two bigs at Sedona, and we know how physical she likes to get under the rim, that, and we saw HVO get three fouls in the first half of last week's game against Notre Dame. Like, you have to stay out of foul trouble. That's probably the worst thing that can make this game go from, within reach of 8 points or less to a blowout real quick. We have a lot of depth, and we've talked about a lot of the depth, but Sedona and HVO are going to have to do their thing. Number two will probably be, like I just said, will be the bench. Like, do they come in and does it look like the team kind of takes a step back from the production they had that was in, or does it look like they're still rolling? We know we're Mark Campbell has been very trustworthy in Agnes and Donovan Hunter or Taylor Bigby, whoever he is bringing in off the bench, sixth and seventh. So, and then third would be the bench, but in the forward position, Aliyah Robertson. If South Carolina starts to really dominate with having two bigs in because of Sedona, and they start to dominate with that on the offensive side of the court, will Mark Campbell be able to turn to her and everything looks just as well?
Oh, I would agree with you on all those, and I think I would just add having a fast start. You did it against Notre Dame. You got an 11-0 hole. I don't think you want to do that again, especially not against Dawn Staley, because like we've talked about, she will find a way to kind of coach you out of it. So a fast start, and then limit turnovers. And kind of off of that, have smart shots. Because I if you give them those opportunities for fast breaks and extra possessions, you can get yourself in a little bit of a hole.
Also, two more things I'm gonna add is TCU has kind of been getting burned by fast break quite a bit by big teams. Will be interesting to see how much South Carolina uses that against them. And the other thing is TCU is still kind of yet to play in front of a really, really big crowd. South Carolina's used to it, so I know TCU has players that is used to it as well, but it is a little bit of a different scenario whenever you're playing for a group in front of a big crowd for the first time. So just something to kind of keep an eye on.
Yes. And Dickies, this is not being played at Schollmeyer. This is being played at Dickies. It's part of kind of a bigger tournament. The men will play earlier that day at Dickies Arena as well. So, just a reminder, there's potential for this to be a huge crowd, to your point, that that's something South Carolina's used to. TCU as a team together as a group is not. And so tip off is 6:30 Sunday, December 8th. If you haven't got your ticket, if you're interested and you want to watch this team, like we've been talking about, this is probably one of the best opportunities to see them against arguably one of the best teams in the nation. So let's just kind of hit on a few other little takeaways, other thoughts to wrap up. One thing I wanted to touch on was the poll, which will come out Monday, tomorrow, at the time of recording. TCU entered on November 18 at number 19, which is their highest ranking since 2008 and earliest appearance in the poll in 14 years. Where do you think they're going to be ranked roughly tomorrow?
Look, if it wasn't for poll inertia, I'd say number two right behind UCLA. Because they have the two biggest wins, right, out of any other women's basketball team. Like you beat number three, North Carolina State still a top 20 team. Like you're not, like you have two top 20 wins, right? Like I know poll inertia is an actual thing. If we're going to be completely honest here, I think TCU does slide in the top 10 solely for if South Carolina wins, they could put it back at number one with a top 10 win. That's what happens. But yeah, I do actually expect TCU to be in the top 10. Would love to see them at number five and jump Texas because I think it would be hilarious, but I won't go that far.
No, I agree.
Although it could happen. Like Texas really hasn't played anyone, right? Like you got to reward wins at some point.
You do. And I agree. I think they could easily crack the top 10 or be number 10. And that's the other thing too. Like they can market it as here's a top 10 matchup on ESPN. There's something to that as well. That's not to say that TCU doesn't deserve to be ranked high. You just we all know those things play into that stuff as well.
Should they be the highest ranked Big 12 team over Kansas State, who was number nine
I don't know that
last time?
Kansas State has wins quite like these.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and if Kansas State was at nine, like I looking at a top 10 team.
So I'll be curious to see where they end up.
Speaking of Kansas State, it's not on the question, so I want to ask it real quick. Is TCU, should they be the favorite to win the conference now? I know they weren't when the season started,
They
but we've
very well
seen what
might
Iowa
be.
State looks like. We've seen what Baylor looks like. And we've seen what Kansas State looks like now. Like, should they move up to being the favorites to win the conference?
I think they very well might be because look at what they're doing. I mean, yes, they're the only undefeated Big 12 team left. So, I mean, okay, you could say for that reason, but I think it's because of who they've beaten along the way. is why they would be the new favorite. And I think that's the next thing that this team is going to kind of have to adjust to, is they're going to be the team with the target on their back, even though they have not played a single Big 12 game.
Yeah, like you're gonna Kansas State and is probably the other best team that I would say would really give TCU a run for their money because of their veteran and experience they have on their team. And they're comparable to NC State. There's not a team that's like Notre Dame in the conference. There's not a team like South Carolina in the conference when TCU plays them. Like it is, I'm just having a hard time trying to even temper expectations for the conference because I mean, obviously Baylor's going to be a close, it's a rivalry, all that. But TCU has a very, very favorable Big 12 schedule for the first half of the conference play.
They really do. And I think it's easy to say, oh, they'll be, 9-0 halfway through conference play, and they could be. But weird things happen. Somebody gets into foul trouble, you have a bad shooting night, all these things, and so you're 8-1 instead of 9-0.
I don't think that happens.
It might not.
There's
So
no one close to even Sedona level in the conference.
no. And so
No one
that's
close to
why
HVL level. Like it's so tough.
And that's the thing. So that's why I'm like, I if they go undefeated halfway through conference play, we kind of revisit that, I wouldn't be shocked. But also doing what South Carolina did last year and going 38-0 is really, really, really hard.
Like TCU was very like close to winning games last year when they had tryouts for teams in the conference play. Like, I'm
No,
not trying to be rude, but like there's a major drop off in women's basketball talent when you hit a certain level.
there is. And I think, like you talked about earlier, TCU is definitely over that bump to where they're on the other side of it.
Yeah.
Wherein last year a little bit, mainly just because of all the injuries, but especially in past years, they've been on the backside of it, where they're the ones who they're just not going to beat the elite teams because they don't have the talent. Now they do. And so it's, I don't want to sit here saying, oh, they're going to go undefeated in conference and they're going to, go 38-0 win the national title. Because you just don't know. But if they're 9-0 halfway through conference, I wouldn't be shocked. Well, anything else you want to touch on as we wrap up going into Florida Atlantic and South Carolina this week?
Or you're Mark Campbell. Maddie Scherr's back this week. What are you doing?
Whew.
Are you touching with what isn't working? All right, let's say she's not here for the Florida Atlantic game, right? Because I think if she's here for the Florida Atlantic game, you give her some
Yes,
minutes, get her
absolutely.
a little bit of game ready, and then you throw her in against South Carolina for like 10, 8, 10 minutes, right? Let's say she's not ready for Florida Atlantic, she's ready for South Carolina. Are you still sitting here just because you don't want to touch what's been working?
I think to a certain extent, yes. It may be something you see kind of how she's doing in practice, how she's fitting in. Maybe you give her a couple minutes to South Carolina, depending on how the flow of the game is. Maybe it's going a certain way that you feel like she, give her 3 minutes and she'll really excel in that setting. But you also don't want to throw her in and disrupt everything. So I think if she's back for Florida Atlantic and she can get 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes, and also keep in mind she's not going to be in basketball shape. Agnes went through the same thing. She didn't play it much the first two games because she was trying to get back into shape. So I think you also have to take that into account a little bit too, if her first game back at South Carolina. Especially because that game's going to be probably pretty fast paced. It's going to be a little more intense and aggressive than a Florida Atlantic game. And you just don't know if she's in that basketball shape yet.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I don't, again, I don't envy Mark Campbell for anything that's happening in the next 2 weeks, right? Like these are all tough decisions for him. Speaking of the intensity of the South Carolina TCU game, if you've never been to a Final Four, Elite Eight, Sweet 16 game, like this is the closest you can probably ever get to. Like the intensity for that will match that of an Elite Eight, Final Four, Sweet 16 matchup. Like these girls are going to treat it like it is that matchup, like, because it very well they could meet up again at that point. Like, it is if you it, tickets are also not expensive for the event. Like, if you want to watch this team and watch another top three team in the country, and you didn't want to buy Flow Sports because they're ran by a dictatorship, I digress. This is your best chance to do it, right? Like, even TCU men's doesn't really get matchups like this. Like, come watch something that isn't done and has never been done in program history. Like, come support them.
Yeah, well, and to your point there, this is a rare matchup. Last podcast we talked about, is this the best team in program history? Time will tell. It has the potential for that. So come watch and see. It's one of those things where if you have that opportunity to watch this team, don't pass it up. Yeah. Well, that's all we have for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. For JD Andrus, I'm Tori Couch. Thank you for listening to Splash Pad, a TCU on SI podcast. Until next time, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, guys.